Professor X celebrates by drinking right in the middle of the gosh darn day. It's like, what, like one, maybe 1 p.m.?
Listen, he's just celebrating that he doesn't have a lawsuit on his hands. Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shans.
And I'm Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're looking at the worst superhero movies ever and seeing if they're fun or straight up dumb on
Cape or Cap, a bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast. Welcome to Cape or Cap, our bonus season here on yet another DC animated podcast. My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year the Phoenix Festival, it's a music festival, happened in England, I think. I didn't check the location, but I do know that it had David Bowie, Alanis Morissette, Bjork, Foo Fighters, Coolio, and more.
What?
There were more like 30 artists there. After this year, after 1996, they tried it one more time, and then they tried to resurrect it, but it didn't. It fell to ashes. They couldn't do it.
Ah, fell to ashes. Let's see what you did. Wow, that's, you know, that hit on the nose for a lot of things. I'm mainly thinking about, like, they tried it again, like, this story that we're going to talk about was a try again and it fell to ashes.
Oh, yeah.
Because as a reminder, really quickly, we are going through films across the multiverse, because right now with the current DC multiverse kind of coming to an end with their crisis event, we're checking out other films that had their impending doom already forecasted, including this one, X-Men Dark Phoenix. So today we are covering this film, which ended the 19-year run of main continuity X-Men films. At least I think that's, I mean, the area might be gray. There's like Deadpool and, you know, the New Mutants film existed.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
Yeah. But either way, at a runtime of 114 minutes, this 2019 film was directed and written by Simon Kinberg. He's the director behind such productions as 355 or 355, 355. I really have no idea how they actually promoted that film. But if you
terribly.
Have time, check it.
Didn't do well, guys.
Yeah, I mean, it has a great cast. It just was not really promoted well. We also, as I mentioned, he wrote this film, X-Men Dark Phoenix, along with other films such as the Fantastic Four movie featuring Michael B. Jordan, Jumper, which is a personal bad favorite film of mine, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and the original version of this story adapted for the screen, X-Men The Last Stand.
So, hey kids, look, if you mess up once, you can get a chance to try again.
Yeah, but sometimes maybe move on to something else.
Yeah, but it's okay sometimes also if you make a mistake to not try again sometimes.
Quick fun fact that I did come across, unrelated to Simon Kinberg, but really about X-Men Productions. Did you know that the X-Men have been going on screen basically since like 1989?
I can't think of what was on in 1989. What were they doing?
They had a one-episode production called Pride of the X-Men. That's Pride as in spelled as in Katie Pride with a Y. And that episode, which basically you can't find anywhere in the world now, was the inspiration for the video game, the arcade game that we constantly play whenever we go to any kind of space that has arcade games, especially the X-Men game.
Oh, I love that game.
Mm-hmm.
Pick Wolverine or you're going to have a bad time. Storm's good too, but Wolverine is really what you want to pick.
This is also funny thing about this film, or at least about the X-Men in general, is we just experienced the longest break between X-Men on-screen productions, because between New Mutants and X-Men 97, that was like 1,300 days.
Whoa. Well, you know what? They needed the break.
Yeah, they exhausted everything, especially with this film. Which has our cast list starting off with Sophie Turner coming off of her stint as Sansa Stark from Game of Thrones, Today, she's giving her final performance as Jean Grey after three films in the franchise. And Summer Fontana plays her younger counterpart, who many fans of the Vampire Diaries universe might recognize as Hope Michelson, the daughter of Klaus, and I'm forgetting the mother's name right now, but from what I can always been told about her, she's been a pretty big deal.
Yeah, all the Vampire Diaries fans are going to come after us. Thanks.
Next up, we got James McAvoy, who's reprising his role as Charles Professor Xavier. This is the first time he spends the entire... Actually, I take that back. There were many scenes in which he was not bald in this. Michael Fassbender attracts us to his role as Eric Lenscher, a.k.a. Magneto. Nicholas Hoult is Beast. Alexandra Shipp is Storm. Ty Sheridan is Cyclops. Evan Peters is Quicksilver. Cody Smith McPhee is Nightcrawler. Jessica Chastain seems to be the leader of a group that's supposed to be the main antagonist of this film. And she's also credited with a name that I'm 90% sure they never said in this film.
They don't, and we'll talk about that.
And finally, we have Jennifer Lawrence, who hits us right through the heart as she gives her final performance as Raven, a.k.a. Mystique.
She lays it all on the line. We would not have asked for a better performance.
All right, so with that, just like most X-Men productions, I guess it's time to fly and then crash the Blackbird right into the beginning of X-Men Dark Phoenix.
So we get some very vague narration from Charles Xavier about evolution, and that's fine. You know, that's how most of those original X-Men movies started, so I guess it's a callback, throwback to those. But after that, we get a scene which a young Jean Grey, she is just in the car. Her mom's listening to some trash music and she wants to change the radio. So the radio starts changing and they don't know this yet, but it is Jean's powers manifesting that she can use her telepathy to change the radio station. Or her power, would have been funny if her power was literally just to change radio stations. Like that was the extent of it.
You'd be the greatest DJ, probably.
that's all you'll be doing. You won't be fighting with the X-Men because they fight people that can punch through you in like a single punch. So she is changing the music. And okay, I'll address this later, but the scene in the beginning of the movie presents it as her mom is so distracted by the music change that she runs into the other lane of traffic and crashes. That's how the scene is presented originally. Jean's parents die automatically. So Xavier, as Jean is orphaned, and apparently the nurses don't tell her that her parents are dead.
Right. Which is like, who was going to tell her except them?
Exactly. I don't think a hospital can actually do that. I'm not sure you can have a young patient in and not tell them that the parents are dead. I just feel like you shouldn't be able to. But
for anybody that's a nurse or a doctor or of anything, a medical practitioner of any sort, if you're listening to this podcast, please let us know. We have big questions about this because this doesn't feel ethical whatsoever.
No, it's almost as unethical as the show The Resident, which is, I just started on Netflix. It's absolutely insane. Doctors let people die and hide that they killed people in surgeries. But that's a story for another time, because now it's time for Xavier to get a new X-Men.
Yes, because, you know, besides Batman, Charles Xavier loves recruiting kids to fight in his battles.
Especially orphans.
Oh, crap, yes. And here we get like a good moment, because I will say I did appreciate this line, because as they're talking, Charles does share that he's a mutant and that her powers, Jean's powers, are manifesting, showing that she's also a mutant. And she's like, she feels really out of place. She doesn't understand her place in the world. And she feels like her powers right now are more of a curse than they are anything. And what he does is that he takes out a pen from his pocket. He gives this to her to say, hey, this is a gift to you. A pen has many, many things you could do with it. You could write a letter. You can draw something with it. Or you could stab someone in the eye. This is the actual dialogue in the film. But what he does share is that whatever you do with the pen is what you do. It's like the use is different from the object. So much like you, Jean Grey, your powers could be used to create and do many great things, but is with proper practice that you can do that, versus if you let it run wild, people could get hurt. And I do appreciate the fact that he doesn't share that, like, it was kind of like her fault as to the distraction of her mother crashing, unfortunately, and everything, her parents passing away. As she agrees to come with them, they stand in front of the Charles Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters at the X Mansion. And this is when they show now that, like, Jean has fully accepted that she's going to be joining in this school, and even shares that this was like the first day of the rest of her life. As we jump to what was supposed to be present day, sorry, no, it's 1992, it's about like 8 years after the events of X-Men Apocalypse. And now the X-Men are more seen as like heroes around the world, which I feel is a major contradiction to what I've always known of the X-Men, because in the 90s, they were basically treated like as if it was straight up racism. So seeing them as heroes was a little wild.
I mean, speaking of contradiction, 1992, right? If X-Men 2000 takes place in the same universe, what the hell happened to Charles in 8 years? Why does James, how did James McAvoy, look, Patrick Stewart's a beautiful man, I'm not gonna lie, but how does James McAvoy go to looking like Patrick Stewart in 8 years? What the hell happened to you, bro?
Probably the events of this movie, to
I guess so. Got him stressed. But here in the 90s, they are just chilling around being X-Men when a space shuttle is gets in trouble. So the president of the United States calls Professor X to help out with that. So he sends a bunch of X-Men to hop in their X-Jet and go up into space. And we have Storm, Cyclops, Nightcrawler, Mystique, Beast. Not quite sure why Mystique needed to be there.
Yeah, it seems like she's the de facto leader of this strike team only because of age.
Sure. And Storm, can she use weather powers in space? Is that a
So
thing?
this is a yes and no. I want to say, so back in the day, this is Storm wasn't given much respect, unfortunately. That's the reality that we lived in. Storm is, as of like the late 2000s, has been more considered an Omega level mutant. So things like conjuring things in space like that is more real. So I think that what they did was that they knew that they had to put respect on her name and now give her the ability on screen to basically, what ends up happening is as they arrive to the ship that's lost a little bit, lost in space, and is about to get hit with this solar flare, she's able to create some like ice shielding on certain holes of the ship, which I gotta say, I mean, I don't know too much about physics or space. I'm not a rocket scientist, but I feel like if there's a hole in your ship, based off of every other space movie I've ever seen, everyone in that ship should have died.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna depending on how fast they get there, it'll take like a few minutes. But the ship was in pretty rough shape.
Say the least.
So yeah, I'm not sure. And their plan basically is to have Nightcrawler jump with Quicksilver so they can gather all the astronauts in an instant and save them. So they do that. But they realize that there was one astronaut they left behind. So Professor X says, "Yeah, Jean can hold the ship together while that happens. Don't worry about it." So Nightcrawler jumps Jean to the ship to hold it together while he finds the missing astronaut, but he is unable to get to her in time before the ship just gets hit by that solar flare. And this is very important because the solar flare starts heading towards her friends. And Jean pulls it towards herself. This comes up later, so I want everyone to remember that. So Jean absorbs the force, the ship explodes, but Jean survives. And everyone looks at her for like a too long of a beat. I'm like, she is floating in the vacuum of space. Please go pick her up. So They pick her up and everyone celebrates. Earth celebrates, crowd celebrates. Professor X celebrates by drinking right in the middle of the gosh darn day. It's like, what, like 1, maybe 1 p.m.? He's starting
listen,
to drink.
Listen, he's just very happy that like everybody came back after he basically sacrificed a bunch of like teenagers to young adults, okay? He is just celebrating that he doesn't have a lawsuit on his hands.
That is fair. And he is called out for it. Raven does call Professor X saying that, you know, you've been seeking fame lately. You're kind of enjoying this. And he's like, I enjoy not being persecuted. Thank you. So it does set up an interesting conflict of him more, not more concerned with fame, but chasing that fame, chasing that notoriety. But that nice conflict is ruined by one of the worst lines I have heard in any superhero movie, where Raven says, women are doing a lot of saving around here. Maybe we should change it to X women.
Yeah, that was a set of words put together in the phrase.
Look, sure, you know, for branding purposes, if you wanted to find a gender neutral name, that's fine. But I didn't see that happening on screen so much. It's like Quicksilver and Nightcrawler did 90% of the work on that last mission. So I don't really understand where this is coming from in the context of the movie. And even so, start an X-Force. I think equal opportunity for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, the X-Men have had so many teams throughout history. Uncanny X-Men, X-Force, just start off a branch of X-Men that is just a female-led team, anything. But I agree. It just felt like trying to make the argument for the sake of making the argument. When also when you look at it, I think there are really only 3 female identified members on that team currently in that moment. And again, they, besides Storm holding Gattaca the ship and Jean taking on the Soul Fair, which granted, those are like very big power moves. But in the end of the day, Nightcrawler and Quicksilver were the ones who went through and pulled the people from the other ship into theirs, pulling them to safety. So yeah. Unless something else happened between in the other films, which I doubt that it did, or between the 8 years since Apocalypse tried taking over, there's nothing really that, nothing that I can see that she could stand on that argument with.
Sure, I'm talking about Jubilee, everything Jubilee's been doing lately.
Yes. I forgot about her. So did this movie. This movie's in general, who just included her as cameos.
I will give it a pass. She did have the scheduling conflict. She could not come back for this.
Okay. So after this big blowout, Jean does go get tested. She gets tested by Beast just to check on everything because, again, she took on the full brunt of a solar flare. And basically came out of it unscathed, especially after she was just floating in space helmetless. And as he's doing all the tests, he's like, basically, I don't have the technology to measure how powerful you actually are. It is wild to see that you were able to do all this. You're off the charts. And Jean is kind of happy about this because she's like, all right, cool. Now that you told me that, I can go and party with the rest of the mutants and the kids that are in this school. She meets it back up with Scott and she's sharing this like great news about like, he literally said off the charts. It's like the least scientific thing a scientific mutant can say. And as they're talking, Scott shares like, you know, are you really okay? Because like you did take on that full hit. Also everybody's just like really, even though like, you just want to check in because like, even though you did do this wondrous feat, I'm a little worried. Also, don't let it get too big of a head for you. But people are starting to call you a really cool name because of what you did, and that name being Phoenix.
Yep, that's the origin, guys. Just a bunch of kids calling her Phoenix.
Basically, I guess if it's in the 90s, is that like an AOL screen name? Is that what that will count as?
Yeah, that's your tag. That's your Your Craigslist tag? I don't know if Craigslist even existed when we were that young. Elsewhere, a bunch of rich people are having a nice dinner at their lakeside house, and some aliens show up. And one of the aliens, somebody goes out to investigate, and it turns out to be Jessica Chastain. And while she's investigating, an alien comes out of the forest and shapeshifts into her. And she's like, well, that's not good that a Skrull, sorry, I said the word Skrull. That's not what these are. They're Dabari. Yes, Dabari, who can shapeshifting aliens, who can just shapeshift into anyone they want and maybe get their memories, though it's not really important for the purposes of this movie at all that they have their memories or not. So they take over the dinner of people, all these aliens. And then, why? Because do they know that they can't? Anyway, don't worry about that. So, while elsewhere, they're at the party for the Phoenix. And somehow Beast and Mystique have a live video feed of a party in the middle of the forest. I
feel like that's just too much overboard in terms of, like, home security. Like, I get it. But, like, I feel like now my scale in terms of home security is like the best home security is probably X Mansion and them spying on these kids during the party versus DCEU's Barry Allen's mother getting killed. And we still to this day don't know who it was.
Well, the tomato sauce can knows, I guess. So at this party, Mystique, while she's watching the party with Beast, proposes that they should leave, get out of the X-Men. Things are a little too crazy. She's like, the X and X-Men stands for Xavier, doesn't it? I'm like, yeah. I mean, he's funding it, so I guess he can, branding-wise. It's cool. X-Gene, I don't know. So while they're debating whether they should leave or not, Jean has just a sudden surge of power, and she knocks everybody out. Instead of guessing if it was the punch she was drinking, maybe she had some early career Four Loko or something, they immediately hook her up, put her into bed, and Professor X decides to explore her mind with good old Cerebro.
Yes, so as we continue with this invasion of privacy, he does show Beast and Raven the full setup that is Jean's mindscape. And as they're going through, it's a very, like, sandish, like, space. Basically, it's just, like, all of her memories are, like, this strings of reality, just, like, fog almost. And Raven, or Mystique, does even comment, it's like, are all minds like this? And Xavier shares, no, this is what Jean's mind has been like since she's been going through so much trauma since the day of the accident. However, he's been working with her for all these years to try to put up a block around all these traumas and sharing that, like, he has been working with her to place mental barriers, which comes into the ethical question of, like, was that something that Xavier should have done? Raven questions it, and he's just like, it was the only way that I could keep back her true full power, which is already the beginning of the ominous sense of, like, Jean could have gone rogue. That pun not intended. And the more that he's venturing through, Jean starts to wake up. And as she wakes up, she's recognizing Charles in her mind. He's trying to calm her down as they're watching. And they do see, once again, the scene of basically her parents and what happened on the day of their accident. But more importantly, the lie that has been told to her entire life since that day, being that her father, John Gray, did not die during the day of the accident, but instead decided to give her up to go stay with Charles Xavier.
Yeah, and this is not good news for her. So she decides, I'm going to check it out myself. She knocks out Cyclops and goes towards her father. So after Jean finds out about her father, she immediately wants to go after. So she knocks out Cyclops. Professor X is trying to chase her to get to her before she gets to her dad. But he is not quick enough in the jet. So Jean finds her dad alive and they're talking. It's a very tentative conversation. It's very tense because he's very awkward and doesn't really know what to say. And she notices that there are no pictures of her, which, I mean, I think from the context clues of him being alive and not contacting you, you kind of knew he didn't want to mess with you. It's like, did you think he had amnesia? Like, I don't know. So it's now revealed that we replay the opening scene, and it's turned out that Jean actually knocked out her mom that day and directly caused the accident. Why they felt the need to trick us, I'm not really sure why, what benefit that did to any of us. So as Jean is getting more upset, the X-Men arrive, and so do the cops. Did anyone call the cops?
Right. There was no reason. There was at no point in which, like, Jean did something that was wild. Like, she didn't. I mean, she probably flew over. But, like, I don't think I would call the cops if I saw someone flying overhead of me. If they were calmly entering a home very peacefully. In fact, there was at no point in which there was, like, any shouting, angry moments, except from Jean just being like, you've been lying to me my entire life. And then when they start feeling the rumbling, the thing that causes the most chaos is the entry of the X-Men.
Yeah. I originally thought her father called them, like, out of, like, abundance of caution. That's how I remembered it. But then I watched it. I was like, no, he actually didn't. Like, he just was really awkward about it.
Honestly, I feel like you shouldn't call the cops. I feel like he should have called Charles, because, like, how are you going to explain to the cops, like, hey, this is my daughter who I gave up because I couldn't deal with her, and now she's confronting me now. I would have called Charles and be like, yo, my man, what's up? Like, why? We had a deal. Like, why she here?
We had a deal, King. So now, yeah, but speaking of, the X-Men are here, and they're going to try to make things better.
By making everything worse, because as Jean sees everybody come through, Charles is, like, pleading with her to calm down and just come with them so that they can just reassess everything that's going on, because I believe he's sensing that these barriers are breaking now. Because now that she's learning more about what was hidden from her, it's these powers of hers are starting to grow, and she's, like, evolving almost to the next step, which was a big issue, not for her, but for other mutants in the last movie. And as he's working with his team now to tackle everything that's going on, unfortunately, as we mentioned, the cops do arrive. They immediately draw to shoot, which is weird because they spent the entire movie prior to this showing that the X-Men were heroes. So to have it be that, like, what the person who basically was the top hero from the latest mission be the person that now the cops are trying to take out versus, hey, let's try to figure out what's going on here. It's a lot. It does not make sense the way that the X-Men are then transferred into, like, the problem causers. And as Xavier sends his team in to help out, Jean, unfortunately, is starting to attack some of the cops, because at this point, she's, like, diving and absorbing herself into this anger she's now feeling. And we have moments in which, like, Quicksilver tries to speed up to try to stop her from attacking anybody too much, which was a waste of time because she sends him back flying at even faster speed. I think also Storm
right out of the movie.
Right, oh my gosh, yeah, right out of the movie. I forgot. We never see. but yeah, Quicksilver's gone. He's alive, but he's just gone. Probably smacked him right into Scarlet Witch and WandaVision, honestly. Storm tries to attack, and in this moment now, Charles decides that the best course of action is to follow Raven's plan, which was for her to walk up to Jean as the leader of the team, talk to her, try to calm her down, tell her that, like, hey, we're here for you. We're the family that you've had this entire time. And well, I'll let you talk about what happened about family.
Well, Family's not strong enough here, not stronger than a tree, because Jean launches Mystique back. She dies like Logan, and let's not deny it, this death was ripped straight from Logan because she dies with a wood going through her. And Jean just dips, you know, and leaving the X-Men with this mess. And they have a funeral. Beast doesn't bring his umbrella too, for Mystique, and everyone starts discussing what to do. Like Cyclops tries to stick up for Jean. Storm is saying, "I think we need to take her down. I, you know, people with that much power can't be trusted." Speaking from experience, because she just dealt with someone who had a lot of power and could not be trusted. Professor X, surprise, surprise, he's drinking again. But Beast lashes out at Professor X, says, you know, because Professor X is kind of weirdly downplaying his grief in this scene, being like, oh, this is where I met Raven, la di da di da. And Beast is like, bro, what the hell are we gonna do about this? And so they're not friends. And Jean, while she's chilling in an alley with no umbrella, the alien villain, whose name is Vuk, Vuk, what is her name?
They never say it in the film, because we'll never know, but it's spelled VUK. She's the leader of the, as you mentioned, the Dabari alien shape-shifting race. Oh yeah.
Yeah, we're almost. I'm gonna call her Space Karen.
Space Karen, I like that.
Space Karen attacks Jean's father for information, and she says a line that should sound badass, where she goes, "Before I interrogate you, I just want you to know that it's a shame that you won't give up the information. Your language is so much easier to understand when you're not screaming." Is there a language that is easier to understand when people are screaming? I Please let us know in the comments if there is a language that is easier to understand if you're
Not gonna
screaming
make the
your head
joke.
off.
I'm not gonna make the joke. I have one in mind. I'm not gonna make the joke.
It, while you ponder what that is, we're gonna go over and because guess what? Jean found an island and it's a nameless island.
I believe this was supposed to be Genosha. I
Yeah.
don't think they ever said it, but this is supposed to be Genosha, which in X-Men history is supposed to be a safe haven, basically run by Magneto, where all mutants can be safe. Basically, in this one, we learned that the land was given to him by the U.S. government. I guess after the events of Apocalypse, which is like, hey, consolation prize. We won't murder you on this. These couple of blocks that has no infrastructure. And as she arrives, some people are wary about it, but Magneto or Eric, he's like, all right, it's all good. I know her. She's like people with my people. And they get a chance to talk, and he sees on her shirt that there's blood. He questions, like, whose blood is this? Why are you here? Why are you not with Charles? And she's not giving him any straight answers. In fact, she even comes up and says that the reason why I came to you is because I understand that you have killed people in the past. And I was like, that's really messed up because many people in this universe have killed people in
Not a great opening.
the
Like technically, I think Charles has killed some people.
I think Charles has the highest kill count in this series, to be honest. I mean, if we're talking about Logan, like, I mean, it hasn't happened yet, but like, technically.
Oh well. Before they can really get to what's going on, the military arrives with helicopters. And here again is another example of the movie escalating without any clear reason why. Because, yes, at this point, Jean has attacked some cops. But I don't think the US military would immediately go after her. I don't think that's the escalation of events at all. How did they know she was even there?
Exactly. That was
I
my main question.
do they have the scripts too? Because they arrive to the island and Magneto is trying to calm things down. He doesn't want to expose that Jean's there. But out of really nowhere, in the middle of the conversation, Jean decides to lift one of the helicopters, and her and Magneto play helicopter hot potato. And eventually, Jean throws away the chopper, which Magneto's like, "Look, you're bringing too much smoke here. Please leave." So she does. And it's further revealed that the president has now cut Charles Xavier off, which, if this is an international manhunt you're starting for a mutant, don't you want his help finding her? Wouldn't it be the opposite? Wouldn't Professor X want to cut him off so he doesn't
Exactly.
kill Jean? I don't quite understand why, but I do understand that this is the scene now where Jean, because she can be so easily found, is randomly found by the Space Karen.
And this is where we get some insight of like basically what happened here. So Space Karen explains her whole thing about her being from the shape-shifting alien race. They arrived on Earth with the purpose of harnessing this, like the solar flare that Jean took on. But surprise, surprise, it actually isn't just a regular solar flare. It's a cosmic solar flare that has the ability to either destroy or recreate a world. And unfortunately, her race, the alien race of the Dabaris, were on the former end of that, where they were her their whole entire planet was destroyed when this cosmic flare passed through it, destroying it. And they want to harness this power that Jean now has to try to recreate their own world again. It's under the guise that they just want to use it to create a whole separate other planet somewhere else. But we know learn from the Space Karen that, you know, she doesn't feel great about the fact that there are people who are not like her inhabiting her the world that she treasures. So now she wants to, and that world now being Earth. So now she's toying with Jean. She's telling her that, you know, we can work together to make this a reality. And all she just wants is to work alongside her. This is where, again, none of the X-Men, none of they don't really know what's going on. Beast has this whole huge blowout with Charles Xavier. He ends up leaving, taking the X-Jet over to the island of Genosha. And this is where I think in the first time I've ever seen where Beast and Magneto actually come to terms and agree on one particular course of action, which is to take out Jean as a way to avenge Mystique.
Yes, because you know this is a time of movie where Magneto has to lose a family member. Has to happen
This
once a
man,
movie.
oh my God, it really does have to watch the movie.
So we also get a little more context from Space Karen, a little bit that the force they were following started the Big Bang, and it destroyed the world that her and the aliens are from. So they decided to follow it in
Oh
the
yeah, it's like,
hopes
well, how did
that
you
they would
follow
control
it? Your world was
it.
destroyed. What did you use to follow it?
Guys, if you're camping and a bear destroys your tent, here's some advice, just some free advice. Don't follow it. Let it go and do whatever it wants. And you get the hell out of there. You get out of the way of the bear. You leave the forest. You don't go follow it, see what happens next. So she further says, Jean, you can use this and you can create things. But I don't know why Jean would. She's like, you can evolve, you can become more powerful. And it's like, does Jean want any of that? I think Jean just wants to not have killed her friend.
Yeah.
I don't know what the goal is, but in any case, they're at a nice New York apartment. Don't ask how they got there. Don't ask whose apartment they're actually in. Don't worry about it. Xavier decides to assemble a team to find Jean because he finds her by following where Magneto and Beast went. Sure. And Xavier tries to just bring Cyclops, but Storm and Nightcrawler insist on going with him. So they all go over there. And now they confront Magneto, Beast, and his two His two new mutant sidekicks.
Yeah, they're credited as Ariki and Celine. As far as I can tell, I'm pretty sure that there's like some random mutant characters that they do connect to, but nothing I can really find that it was just like they were a part of this actual storyline.
Yeah, one could weaponize his locks, and the
Forgot about that.
that's his power, and the other mutant has like psychic.
Mild psychic abilities, I think.
Yeah, they don't really do much. I'm not even gonna give them nicknames. I'm sorry. They're just not gonna be that important enough to even get that. So they have a brief confrontation where they're like, hey, we're here to save Jean. We're here to kill her. And Cyclops out of nowhere says, "I will fucking kill you." What?
Right. I was like, first off, this is the way you use your one F word in the PG-13 film.
Yeah, it's so out of nowhere, but I will give them props. It does lead to a cool street fight, where. Because the one Magneto villainess has the powers of mind manipulation, she can counteract Professor X and mess with Nightcrawler's teleporting. Surprisingly, weaponizing locks is a really effective weapon.
I mean, honestly, if you've never been slapped in the face by like a braid, it is very dangerous.
You could get hurt, guys.
Yes.
Be careful out there. And as a final act to this, really, I do have to give full props. This fight is really, it uses a New York street really creatively, has beasts jumping on cars, Cyclops using his beams and refracting them off of mirrors in interesting
Oh yeah, that was
ways.
a good one. I also did like this one scene in particular too, where Magneto is able to pull a New York City train station or subway or sorry, a New York City train from underground and creates a brand new playing field for everybody to basically somebody got hit with the train. It is wild. I think honestly, to watch this movie just for that scene, just that's what made it for me.
Yeah. Though I will, there's one thing about realism because if the A train was pulled up from the ground, people wouldn't freak out. They'd be like, ah, oh, God, how long is this going to take? 10 more minutes? Ah, God. I'm never going to get to my showing of Godzilla versus Kong on time. Ah, well, this is the 90s, so maybe like Dunson checks in. I don't know.
I was gonna say, or another Godzilla movie, I
Yeah,
don't
probably.
know.
But the train thing does work, and now Magneto gets to confront Jean Grey.
And it's a cool entrance scene. He crashes through the building itself. He's floating in. Jean and Space Karen are hanging out on the meeting place of where the staircase ends up, creating this loft area. And Space Karen is kind of egging Jean on, be like, you really are more powerful than you think. Magneto, of course, has his helmet, and he's thinking, all right, well, I could block whatever Jean is going to throw at me. However, this new evolved Jean does something that I think is a pretty smart idea, which I'm surprised that no one has ever thought about before, by taking Magneto's helmet and using her telekinetic abilities to start crushing it around his head. And the pressure is just too much for him that upon it finally breaking, not through his head, but exploding out, he does get knocked out. And this leads to Jean taking some more of the some more metal around her, using it as like a binding handcuff thing against him, and sends him flying back outside. There's also a cool scene too in which Magneto takes the staircase and rips it off of the staircase, the railing, and almost plunges it right at Jean's eye, but she's able to stop it, showing that like Jean really is on a whole new level playing field when it comes to her abilities, especially when she has the support of a Space Karen.
Space Karen's ready to call the police if things go wrong.
Oh, maybe she was the one that called him before.
That's so an interesting thing here, because in the next scene, Xavier is able to bop into the New York City apartment. And Jean is like cruelly making Professor X walk using telekinesis. And Space Karen is really happy about this, but because Jean is using the powers to make this happen. But if her home is destroyed by this terrible power, why would she be happy to see someone using it for evil? Wouldn't she not want this to happen? Because
Exactly.
I don't understand why she's so happy about this. And things get more confusing because Xavier, now completely overwhelmed by Jean, uses talk no jutsu and is able to find one good memory that breaks Jean out. And Jean's like, actually, I don't want to use this power anymore. I don't like who I'm becoming with this power. So Space Karen's like, oh, I could just take it. And she
Which
starts taking it. Was that always on the table?
why wasn't it just used before? Like, it does not make any sense because she also is able to fully absorb it, or at least like partially absorb it enough that she could basically do the thing that she wanted to do.
Yeah, why would she not take it? Why would she wait until this moment to take the power? It makes no sense. She had all day.
My gosh, it is wild. It is unnecessary. I think they just did it to try. Honestly, you could have had the entire fight scene and not include any of that. Like, you could have just had Space Karen lurking off in the background, looking to see what Jean would do, and then finally decide, was like, well, she's not gonna do the thing. Might as well just do what I actually wanted to do, or even show that, like, there was some opposition maybe from the other, because like there are several Dabari characters on here, like several people. They never have any conversation. It would have been great if we had a conversation when they were like, she's like, I want to take on the power. And they're saying, no, your body won't be able to handle it, or something like that. Showing us, like, give us some more motivation, some more understanding of, like, why is it that Space Karen's here just wants to use this power? And then she just decides to go against the wishes of her people and just take it for herself. Like, anything else to explain the motivations of these villains would have made sense for this film.
Yes, and we will get into later, maybe when we talk about what happened behind the scenes, some of this will make sense later. But in this movie, Cyclops comes in and interrupts the process before it can be completed. But unfortunately, the US government once again comes in and captures all of the mutants, good and bad. Cyclops does manage to launch Space Karen almost to the sun, but she survives the hit thanks to the Phoenix Force. Maybe we'll also get into how she survives this hit in a minute, but everyone is captured and put in collars. They're on a train and being shipped. How did they get to the train? What train did they take from New York City?
I need to know how many guards were there to take them all out, given like legit. I mean, there were like some people who were knocked out, but like there was enough people
Yeah.
that they should have been able to at least fight back. Like everyone, it seemed like even gained mutants who were like on this train, which was really weird.
Yeah, they had a whole, like a fully operable, fully staffed train. Like, who did this?
We'll never know.
We won't. Definitely because the Dabari aliens come to get Jean Grey off of this train. They start on the opposite end of the train than she is, which I'm like, it makes no sense. Why would
This is the
you?
worst version of Snowpiercer I've ever seen in my
Yeah.
life.
Why did you go the long way? You know where she is. So they board the train, and here is one of the most confusing aspects of this movie. So aliens, the Dabari get shot by guns, but it doesn't kill them. But when they use higher caliber ammo, it does kill them, except when it doesn't. So, are guns effective against the Dabari? Nyeh, is the question this you'll have this entire scene because it goes back and forth many times on whether they can actually be killed by gunfire.
I also appreciate too that during this entire battle, it shows that they are all significantly stronger than any of the mutant powers that anybody has. Like, basically, it seems like power magnetism, trash. Telekinesis or telepathic, trash. Laser beams from the straight up eyes, trash. It just seems like these characters were so overpowered that it's shocking to me that they never got into a larger fight prior to this. And this is all because, again, they're trying to go after Jean. The X-Men now teaming up with like Magneto's side of members. They're trying to hold them back. People die, unfortunately. There are many people that die from both sides, or all three sides. Well, two sides. I don't even know. Like, everybody's just fighting.
Well, Professor X's people are largely okay throughout this battle. Magneto's people die immediately.
Yeah. Those locks were not able to battle off, I guess, like brute strength for some reason. But as they are like trying to subdue them all, we do get some like cool usage of powers throughout the scenes. But we do have to bring this to an end where Xavier is sitting next to Jean, who is basically, this was another question, because it was like the amount of like restraints that they had on Jean means that they had to be there for a very long time in order to get everybody in, plus to lock down Jean's head, her arms, her legs, her torso. Basically, this girl was strapped to a tab, like a table. And Xavier is like trying to talk to Jean, tell her about like the importance of family and love and all that. And earlier in the movie, it gets shown that like Xavier's starting to lose his connection to Jean. He's unable to like read her mind, but he keeps throughout the entire time trying to push his own mind into hers. And then she finally responds and says, "All right, I know what I have to do, especially in order to protect my family," as she immediately frees herself from the restraints, which means to me that the entire time when they've spent all this time putting the mutants with their inhibitor collars on, no one thought to do that to Jean.
Guess they figured she was good. So Jean decides to just take the train off the tracks. If the train fall off the tracks, pick it up, pick it up.
Pick it up, pick it up.
In a very admittedly really cool visual where the train is twisting off the tracks, but everybody who she believes in is in a sphere, and they're kind of like flipping upside down in this like protective glass sphere, kind of like how she was in the car crash. In the car crash that killed her parents originally, she put herself in a protective sphere that kept her from getting any injuries whatsoever. So it's kind of a callback to that. And she comes off the train, but there are still some surviving Davari aliens. So they all rush her. They all explode into little mist because they have no chance against her. Power scaling is out the window. So Space Karen tries one last time to absorb the power. And Space Karen says, like, "You could kill me, but if you kill me here, everybody else dies and everyone else starts falling apart like it's the end of Infinity War." So Jean just flies up into space, blows up, and that's that.
Yeah.
So hi, now Phoenix.
Everyone's a little sad, but it doesn't seem like they have much time to really process this grief, which is, I think, a common theme throughout this entire film. We see that Xavier has decided to name the school the Jean Grey School for Gifted Youngsters. He retires, I'm assuming in shame because of everything that happened to him during this film, which gives Beast now the position of headmaster. Unfortunately, his he originally was that plan that he was going to leave with Mystique or Raven because of their love, but he decides to honor her memory by staying behind, helping younger mutants to get understanding of their powers and really be a part of the be just like not to or just rather just get a sense of their powers, but honors her memory also by having a little picture of her on his desk. We see that basically they decide to pull the end sequence of Batman The Dark Knight Rises, as Charles Xavier moves over to Paris. He's there having a cup of coffee or an espresso. And in that moment, we see Magneto coming up. And it's, although the scene is a little lot like Batman Dark Knight Rises, it does seem to be a very nice callback to the relationship between Charles and Eric, where Eric brings out his mobile game of chess. And oh, I just realized that's how weird that sounds. It's just a suitcase that he could play chess. And they offer to, he offers a home to him. And the same way that Xavier did to him in an earlier set of films. So they decide to play this game of chess. And as they pan out, we see a flaming bird in the sky, symbolizing that the Phoenix is still alive and possibly also means that Jean survived this blast that she created for herself.
And that's it.
Yep, no post credits. No post credits.
Because this is where the universe was supposed to end. But yeah, it didn't. So before we figure out, go into what happened and if this is a cape or cap, what in the comics happened here? Is this anything like the Dark Phoenix storyline in any way?
I'm so mad about this, but there is a lot of accuracy in
Oh,
this movie.
whoa, okay.
It is, in my opinion, might be the second most accurate telling of the Phoenix to Dark Phoenix story. First is always going to go to X-Men, the animated series. They knocked it out the park, like literally knocked it out the park. But in general, the story is considered like one of the best, if not the best, in X-Men comic storytelling. So Dark Phoenix itself actually takes place between issues 129 to 138 of Uncanny X-Men that ran between January to October of 1980. But the first introduction of the Phoenix Force, at least like the proper larger storytelling of it, especially as it came into possession of Jean Grey, was in issues 101 to 108 of the same series that took place between 76 to 77. So previously on X-Men, members of the X-Men team were facing off against like robotic copies of the original X-Men team. You know, this was when before Beast had turned all blue and whatnot. They were called X-Sentinels, and they were created by Stephen Lang, who took over the Anti-Mutant Division after the death of Trask. Battle happened in space. It was at a point where it was just like X-Men, I feel like, have always had battles in space. Once they were like, we can't fight the fight against racism on the ground anymore. We gotta take it to the cosmos. And while they were in space, they did see this solar flare coming towards them. And while they were there, they were like, we need to find a way to get back home, especially because this solar flare might kill us all. But the only way that they can do that is if someone stays behind to manually send the shuttle back down to Earth. And Jean volunteers for this mission, knowing that's going to be a suicide mission, much to the dissatisfaction of many of the members. But she does make a good point because after psychically knocking out Cyclops, who was very adamant about not leaving Jean behind, she says that she's the only one with psychic telekinetic abilities here. So she can monitor and handle all the controls that would normally take a full team to actually to do to make sure they all got home safely. X-Men are saved. Jean takes the full hit of the solar flare. And as the X-Men crash into the bay, a bay back on Earth, and they swim back up to the surface, Jean happens to float back up as well. And this is when she's in a brand new costume, calling herself Power Incarnate. And especially now using the name Phoenix.
Okay.
So if that sounded very familiar to anybody, that is basically a lot of what we saw in the X-Men animated series, which they did a great job again of adapting. As time progressed, though, Jean seemed very much like herself. So no one was taking too much craziness over the fact that like Jean almost died. They were just happy that she was still with them. But unfortunately, this started to open up the doors to more cosmic threats, including a face-off with the members of the Shi'ar Empire and a group called Starjammers, who was led by Scott's biological father that neither he or Scott knew that they were related, but we'll just pass on by that.
Well, you can't get child support in space, huh?
It's like, haha, I'm out of your jurisdiction. But again, you can actually watch this whole entire story play out in the third season of the X-Men animated series in episodes 3 through 7 of that third season. But as I mentioned, the things that do get adapted from the comic that we do see in our film, one of the main things is the mental blocks that Jean has. So unfortunately, Charles didn't get as much crap about it as he did in the movies. But he does share that, like, he's been working with Jean to put up these mental blocks in order to hold back the full extent of her powers. This was even before the Phoenix had entered her body. But then we have members of the Hellfire Club. These were people who have been around for decades, centuries, who have been manipulating things from behind the scenes and came across the knowledge of the Phoenix, this cosmic entity, which has now entered Jean Grey. And they decided to, by being led by their leader, Mastermind, to try to convince Jean that she's actually been a member of this club this entire time, so they can trick her into using her power so they can control basically everything with the power of the Phoenix Force.
And gaslighting.
Yeah. So this is the group that is called the Inner Circle. Jean does get convinced, and she even takes on the persona of the Black Queen, because the Inner Circle tended to take on the names of chess pieces in order to show their power. And Scott and the rest of the X-Men, they go in, they fight to save her. Scott has a full-on battle with Mastermind that takes place in the Mindscape. I think they dressed up like pirates for it for some reason. Scott wins. It's a great battle. Unfortunately, something happens where, with that win, it is the final barrier that's holding back the full extent of Jean's power and allows the Phoenix Force to usurp that power to turn her into the Dark Phoenix, because she's upset of how she was used. She realizes that she has all this ability and, like, literally has been restraining herself from using it this entire time. So she goes full evil. This is when it's also revealed, much like our movie, she goes in to meet with her family about what was happening with her. So she does attack them for giving her away. Once she decides to take off after everything that's happened, because the X-Men do find a way to stop her from doing too much damage, she flies off into space. It is actually implied that she flies off through different realities, which I'll talk about for the Phoenix Force in a little bit. But during her flight, she actually destroys a Shi'ar Empire ship and even destroys the sun of a solar system that caused the extinction of a familiar named alien race, the Dabari.
So they're all dead. Not even like
Yeah.
they're just extinct.
There's no space carry. So we see that, like, battle after battle that the X-Men have with the Dark Phoenix, we see that Jean has some moments in which she's able to, like, gain back control a little bit, and she's pleading out to her family. There are many scenes in which she's, like, pleading out to them, like, just kill me. Like, literally, this is, I'm see the harm that I'm causing. It's a nice little scene that we see even in X-Men: The Last Stand, where she's, like, pleading with everybody to be like, I know how much trouble I'm causing y'all, so please kill me. Unfortunately, this all comes to a head when they're transported before the Shi'ar Empire, because Jean has to stand trial for her crimes of what she's done as the Dark Phoenix. And even though she has full control in this moment, she knows that, like, she has to pay for it in some way, shape, or form. So during a trial by combat that Scott is able to orchestrate, Jean actually sacrifices herself and pays the ultimate price by so that the rest of the X-Men are able to travel back home safely, which differs a little bit from the animated series, because the Dark Phoenix saga actually takes place between episodes 14 and 17. The end result of Jean is different, but I can see now that the movie did try to imply the scene of, like, Jean having to sacrifice herself in order to save everyone else. And I think that's only because it was a PG-13 film. They could adapt to more adult themes, which is this idea of this ultimate sacrifice.
Yeah, that okay. So a lot of it does hit those points, just not as
Clean as, yeah.
tightly.
I will say too that, like, just the ending result of it all, I don't want to spoil it too much, but, like, if you are watching X-Men 97, currently at the time of recording this, like, the light three episodes have come out. They are actually really following along the events after what happened here almost completely accurately. There's some jumping around, but this is what happened in the comics is actually playing out really well in this series. So definitely check it out if you haven't already started it. And the biggest thing that I did want to address on is the Phoenix Force, because this thing is a really big deal. It has taken over many people within the Marvel Comics and everything. Jean has just happens to be the most popular, most well-known one, but is actually taking over her daughter, Rachel, which is the daughter that she and Scott had in the Days of Future Past reality for the longest period of time. And other people who've actually possessed it are another daughter that they had. The X-Men actually at one point split it up between a comic series, limited series called Avengers versus X-Men, where the X-Men were trying to bring back mutants after Scarlet Witch had eliminated them from during the House of M storyline. So they saw that it was coming back. Scott decided to use this as an opportunity to bring back mutants. And the Avengers were like, no, we already know the destructive damage that the Phoenix Force could cause. So when they were fighting, the Phoenix Force actually took over, if I'm not mistaken, it was Scott, Colossus, Magic, and two other members of the X-Men. Then it led into Scott. Unfortunately, the other members were defeated in battle, so the Phoenix Force actually took over all of Scott, making him one of the worst villains of the Marvel comics at one point because he had that ability. And that thing about the Big Bang was actually kind of accurate because the Phoenix Force is actually considered life in general, life incarnate, power incarnate. So there's that one point in which Galactus faced off against the Phoenix Force itself when it wasn't being possessed by anybody. And the Watcher intervened to let him know that if you destroy the Phoenix Force, it actually will destroy all life in the universe with no chance of rebirth.
Ooh, that's the opposite of what a phoenix is supposed to do.
Right. So it's wild. It's definitely a crazy big power play when it comes to Marvel Comics in general. It actually doesn't even just stay in Marvel Comics. It actually has the ability to travel throughout the multiverses. There is never mentioned, but it is mentioned. It's never like seen in other universes, but it's mentioned in a lot of these comics that it could actually travel to different realities, such as the DC universe or other, maybe even stuff like seen it in Invincible or anything like that. But the craziest thing that did come out of this whole time that it possessed Jean was during that first time it possessed her during the Phoenix Dark Phoenix saga, was that the body that Jean had during those things was not actually Jean.
Is this borrowed?
Yeah, it basically during the time when Jean had first taken the hit. She kind of made a deal with the Phoenix Force to protect her friends. So that's why they truly survived. And she was like, I'll give over my body in order for you to inhabit it and do what you need to do. But what it did is that it actually created a clone body of Jean that had all the abilities of the Phoenix Force, sent the real Jean into the same bay that they were in, but had her trapped in a coma underwater until she was found by the Avengers. And when the Phoenix Force had actually sacrificed, or Jean had sacrificed the Phoenix Force, so that version of her, the little bit of life force that it took, which actually, if you watch X-Men the animated series, you kind of get a sense of this happening, flew over to Jean in underwater. Thankfully, she had been pulled out by the Avengers by then and woke back up Jean in this original body. Spoilers, I'm sorry, you should have said that prior to that, in terms of X-Men the animated series, if you're watching it through now. But it's a little different, a little matches up, but I would say that X-Men Dark Phoenix does kind of hit on certain things that does come from the comic, but just doesn't use the right people or characters.
I'm glad they didn't do that clone body stuff because I still don't follow it. But sure, have a backup in case something goes wrong. Okay, so that is so that's the Dark Phoenix comparison to comics. So it does get some things right. But so despite getting it right, why did it go wrong? Well, here's the thing. There's a ton of conflicting information on the internet about how extensive the reshoots were, what was going on behind the scenes. So and there's an entire Reddit thread that claims to have another version of the script, which some stuff lines up, some stuff doesn't. So I'm going to stick to the stuff that has been commonly agreed across all media. So I'm going to ask you, would it surprise you to know that the Dabari were not the original villains of this movie?
You know, I had a sense because I was just like, this entire thing feels like, from my reading and research of this, feels more like the Hellfire Club or anything. And I was just like, why didn't we just go with people who have been working behind the scenes all this time? That seems more real to me.
So funny you say that, because the original script was going to have Jessica Chastain playing Lilandra of the Shi'ar Empire,
Ooh, that would have been good.
and
Damn.
the Hellfire Club would have also been in the movie as another antagonist. So there would have been multiple antagonists in the movie. So what happened? Well, Fox knew during the process, after Apocalypse's financial failure, that they were going to reboot the universe. This is back when they were rebooting the universe. So they, at this point, they knew this movie was going to be the big ending. So they said, Simon Kinberg, go and do whatever you want with it. Have a big Dark Phoenix blowout. So he intended to have the Hellfire Club, Lilandra, but the thing was, he wanted the story to be cosmic, but not too cosmic. What does that mean? I don't know. But at some point, he stepped away from Lilandra because he felt that was too cosmic and replaced Lilandra with the Skrulls. So Jessica Chastain and all her aliens were Skrulls for the longest time in the script. Furthermore, they had a plan. So in the original script, the Skrulls came to Earth. Following the Phoenix Force because they wanted to harness it for their own purposes.
Okay.
After it settled in Geen, their plan basically was to infiltrate Earth, in the highest echelons of government, manipulate Geen into essentially doing to destroying parts of Earth in a very public fashion. And then once Jean had done that and framed, and they could frame the mutants, they would come in as saviors and take the force for themselves and also take over the world. So the reason why Space Karen doesn't take the power away in the movie is because she wanted Jean to have it in the final act for a very specific reason.
This sounds a lot like the plot lines of two movies in the same universe. But also, this explains a lot, like why the sudden shift in like the X-Men in general, because like it was, they're regarded as heroes, and then as soon as Jean goes to see her dad, who basically abandoned her, and she should rightfully be angry about that. They literally, they're calling the cops on her. The military gets involved when she heads over to Genosha. Like, a lot of that makes sense. If it was like earlier in scenes that she was doing things to destroy things, they felt like they, even the president being like, yo, I can't talk to you anymore, would have made more sense.
Yeah, and that's why also some scenes also would have made a bit more sense. Like the Skrulls would have originally seen Professor X getting the medal from the president, like he does in the movie. And that's where they come up with a plan on the spot of mutants. And they're like, oh, mutants are almost not accepted. Let's run with this. So there are rumors that unsubstantiated that the reason why these changes happened was because of the Disney acquisition of Fox, and because there were Skrulls in Captain Marvel, which was releasing the same year, they were demanded to take them out. That is unconfirmed, but what they do know is they had bad test screenings, and they did change the last act, which was originally a fight at the UN. Jean Grey was going to fly up into space to repel alien spaceships piloted by Skrulls. Does that sound familiar to you?
My God.
Yeah, they wrote the ending of Captain Marvel by accident. And
Wow.
the movie was going to come out before Captain Marvel in 2018. But because they had to wait months and months for reshoots because they could not get this cast together, the cast was really busy on other projects. So they missed the boat on getting this out before Captain Marvel and had to reshoot it, the third act, to take place on a train because they were confident Marvel wasn't doing that. But so basically, to sum up what happened here, they wanted to do this Dark Phoenix story. They blinked, went at the cosmic aspects a little too hard, decided to pull back, and because they reoriented too late in the process, they had to take apart the script, and tie it together by changing the name of the villain, removing the villain's motivations completely from the story. And as a result, you get this. This kind of this final result that feels like some things were not stitched together right. Also, Jean Grey would have heard voices throughout the entire movie, which would have also made her mental state more urgent, and she would have heard that she's a murderer, and she wasn't sure if the voices were from her head or she was hearing other people say it. Imagine just adding that, how cool
That
that would have
actually,
been.
how I don't understand, how is that? There was nothing else in any other production that was related to Disney or anything like that that would have used that line. That would have been perfect. You could have easily added that in and it would have made more sense.
Well, as it
Wow.
is, this is what we got. So, all that to say, at the end of the day, the Dark Phoenix we did get, is it a cape or cap for you?
Oh, this is a certified cap. I was really rooting for this one. Especially because I mean, I knew it was doomed when it first came out, but I was hoping that maybe it wasn't as bad as I remembered it to be. But honestly, compared to Suicide Squad had a more linear storytelling than this did. The things that I had issues with were just like really just character motivations. Like the whole sense of like the Dabari and Vuk, like the fact that they're never really introduced properly. Like we don't have a sense, like they give the story about the cosmic entity and how it could create worlds and how it could destroy worlds, but like none of the stuff actually makes sense as to like, hey, I'm gonna take over. Like they're not even like, we want to take over Earth to expand our empire, which like, yeah, it's a Skrull kind of mindset, but as we've seen in the MCU as of late, but which I'm talking about like for Captain Marvel and for Secret Invasion, it's not like that is a motivation of the Skrulls anymore. Like it's they're just chilling. Like they don't have a world. So they could have easily just said that we wanted to create a new, like we just wanted to expand our empire and we've known that the cosmic entity could do this, which would have to me easily combined two characters, two teams, which is like the Dabari just created that they're like that, but also bringing a lot of this like Hellfire Club mindset of just like we want to control things. The other issue that I had, which was a big issue for me, was Raven's death. It is the most hollow death I've ever felt in my entire life. Like there is a better writing about the influence that a character's death has had on like the characters in the movie, and you got served. Like to this day, Little Saint's death has a hold on our community.
Rest in peace, Little Saint.
Exactly. We still don't know who got you, but we gonna find out. But like here for Raven, it was just like very hollow. We don't see anything except for like some brief moments of emotion from like Magneto and Beast. And honestly, Beast was the most emotional about it, but it was like for all of like 3 seconds compared to Magneto, who was like rolling with her, and it was just like she had like been on his team, and then Charles, who had known her since she was a child, since they were children, sorry. So it just feels like it was just like Jennifer felt like at this point, as I was watching, it was just like, this is clearly the moment when like Jennifer Lawrence, if I remember correctly, she was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Honestly, at that point, you could just take her out off screen. Just be like, she left. She wanted to do something else. She died off screen. You had 8 years to toy around with this versus let's kill her off in the first like on like 5, 10 minutes of the film, and then never introduce the fact that like Jean has this moment where she's like struggling with the fact that she killed her friend. Because honestly, it doesn't even feel like they are friends. It just feels like Raven was just doing her job of being the leader. She's very forgotten after the first 20 minutes of the film. But I will say that the movie did have its good moments. I think the CGI was kind of cool. Mostly with Storm's power and like Cyclops. I mean, and now it's getting to a point where people are recognizing that like Cyclops' power is more of a kinetic hit versus a laser itself. So unfortunately, this still falls in line with this. And I also did like that line in the beginning. I felt like it was a good line in terms of like the pen, the use of a pen. I think also the confrontation, the first introductory moment of that confrontation between Jean and her father, where it like clicks for her that he gave her away and that like it was truly intentional, did feel real. It felt like that was the natural progression. I'm glad it didn't kind of like draw it out and be like, she's hanging around, she's grabbing a cup of tea. He's in the meanwhile working behind the scenes to try to like call the cops on her or try to like call Xavier to find out what's going on. Like we're seeing him like toy around with that. It was like immediately like, hey, I don't see any pictures of myself. You did this on purpose. And that was the only logical leap I felt in this movie. But what about you? Are you giving this movie a cape, the Storm cape, or is this all bigger cap than the Friends of Humanity?
This is a big cap for me. The movie struggles to establish any actual conflicts because if you really think about it, a lot of the conflicts in this movie don't actually exist. The whole thing with the Dabari aliens, there isn't actually a conflict because they can either steal the power from her or ask her nicely to create the world. They don't have to go through any of the things they go through in the movie at all. Including interrogating her father for her location because they find Jean randomly at a bar. So, like think about that. Like they don't actually needed to do that. Yeah, the whole government and police going after the X-Men is so inconsistent in this movie. They're heroes one day and one of them goes rogue and it's over. There's not enough background to understand why that would happen because if anything, after the events of Apocalypse, where four mutants almost destroy the world, they should be in a bad situation now. But most of all, the Dark Phoenix conflict, the more you look at it, it just doesn't make any sense. Does the Dark Phoenix have its own sentient life? Or is it Jean that's doing all of this? Because the first time it comes out at the party, it's not triggered by any emotional feelings that Jean is having. It just happens. And then in a following scenes, it's implied that it is triggered by her emotion. And then it's like, it yo-yos. And had they simply chosen in the beginning that it is triggered by an emotion, maybe someone mentions the dad, she starts having memories of her dad. And then I'm okay with it. Like consistently have it triggered by emotion. Anytime she has extreme emotions, it triggers. I know this is branching into Storm territory, but you weren't using that for Storm, so might as well use it for Dark Phoenix. So yeah, and as a result, the movie just feels really disconnected. It feels really disorganized the entire time you're there. And it's just the pacing is it's goes by the criminal sin of being boring at parts. Sad to say, because the actors are giving great performances. The movie looks really good at some points when it wants to be, but this just does not feel really tightly bound. And again, I guess it's a common theme because neither did Suicide Squad in the previous week, but yeah, something about this feels off, and I think we need to leave this to the ashes and go to other X-Men movies. I think this one can be left behind firmly. Let's fly away from this one and let it die. Just let it rest.
Yeah, I also you brought up a really good point about the emotion of like, what is the, is it Jean's emotion being influenced by the Dark Phoenix, or is it Dark Phoenix influencing Jean's emotion? Because I agree, it's, as I remember watching, like compared to other versions of and other adaptations of the Dark Phoenix, Jean goes full evil. Like there's no doubt about it. She's literally causing harm. And like, yes, she killed Raven in this movie, but that definitely seems like everything it seems like she's doing is all by accident. She doesn't really give any kind of malicious dialogue in any way, shape, or form. So it is confusing to watch this film and be like, we have no idea who we're supposed to be siding with, because there's no true sense of who are the heroes, because the entire time it's like, yeah, you're supposed to root for the X-Men, but most of them get kicked off to the side. You never see them again. Charles is treated like a villain because he's villain five for the fact that he was toying around with Jean's mind and everything. And then on the other side, it's like Jean feels she's just like doing things not for her own sense of wanting to do it. It just seems like it's literally everybody else is influencing her, telling her to do this thing. And the people who she attack are people who are attacking her.
Yeah, there's a rumor that part of the rumor thread is that when the moment comes, because in the movie she's talking to Raven and she has an emotional outburst and kills Raven. But originally, while she's talking to Raven, she sensed from Raven that she wants to leave the X-Men. So she stops trusting Raven because Raven's like, come back with us to the X-Men. She's like, but you even want to leave. So she senses that doubt and like, is keeping Raven at arm's length. Beast, to protect Raven, tries to shoot Jean. Then Jean does the blast, and that's what kills Mystique. So it's her trying to defend herself, but going too far instead of just having another emotional outburst. And that drives her mental state higher because now she is the killer that they feared. And she senses everyone's scared of her. So there's things that, again, can't 100% confirm, but sound like they would have slotted in perfectly in the movie without many changes. Audio, dialogue, really, could have easily gone there. So yeah, I think I agree. I think it just doesn't feel, she doesn't feel evil enough. She's not evil enough for this movie. And there's no one really is evil enough in this movie, which is a bigger problem.
Yeah, so it just sounds like at the end of the day, the main issue is just like not being able to get into the mind of their characters, which is very ironic when you're writing characters who are telekinetic and telepathic. But yeah, so that's Dark Phoenix, the second on big screen adaptation of this, the many, I think this is, I don't know how many versions of the Dark Phoenix saga we have actually seen, but it's been done so many times. Hopefully this will be some time before we see it again, because again, X-Men have some really great stories. Even right now in the comics, they've always kind of had to deal with the fact that, unfortunately, since they've never been a part of the larger MCU, they've just been pulled out of the continuity a lot, put back in, pulled back out, put back in. Right now, unfortunately, at the point where they're being put back in. So hopefully with like this new set of X-Men storytelling being told, people getting the recognition that they deserve, shout out to Storm to always now being considered an Omega level mutant, especially with just like the growing appreciation of X-Men 97 right now. I feel like literally everybody is just talking about it. I don't know if you've seen the latest couple of episodes or if you started watching it yet, Andrew.
Oh yeah, I'm going from the beginning. So I'm right now.
Ooh.
I just finished the Dark Phoenix saga, and I'm working my way to 97 for the full experience.
Nice, nice. So yeah, just join along for the continued adventures of the X-Men. And also join along for us for our continued adventures through Cape or Cap on this bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast. As
Yes.
next week, we are hopping over, I guess, an entire ocean to tell the story about another, I guess, can we call him a cosmic hero of sorts?
We can in this movie, certainly.
Yes, because join us next week as we cover one of the wildest adaptations of an anime production, Dragon Ball Evolution.
Please lend us your energy. Please put your hands in the sky and lend us your energy. We're gonna need it.
Yes, get ready for that. So that wraps up our episode. Join us next week and be sure to check us out on our socials for details and news about what's coming up. Also, be sure to support us on our Patreon. You can also check us out where you can also find our episodes available on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and wherever else you may get your podcasts. Take care of yourselves. And remember that if you're going to basically roll up on someone's US government sanctioned place, don't bring no heat on them. Like, this is not that type of sanctuary. I'm pretty sure that Magneto just really wanted a calm space to reside in and not find out that you killed his boy or his friend back.
And if you see a bunch of aliens coming towards your nice house on the edge of the lake, just run. Don't go towards them, 'cause I just try at least, you know? Take a video, live stream it. Come on, save us.
Thanks again for listening. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.